Matt, your thoughts on Cardi B's new album?
Banger.
Yep. Your thoughts on Adele or Celine Dion? If you could go see one, which one would you see?
Adele.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. I know when we were looking up...
I would love to hear Adele's version of Heart Will Go On from Titanic, though, because she might make that song better.
That'd be fine. Well, okay, that had a tone to it. Like, that song's fire.
Who sings that?
That song's
Celine
great.
Dion. It's the Titanic song.
You think Adele could sing it better than Celine Dion?
I don't know if anybody can sing anything better than Adele, so...
That's fine. That's all right.
So, Adele, so Matt, you got it, because Celine Dion is, I think her voice is unbelievable.
We were watching her during the Olympics, couldn't hear a word she was saying, but I was captivated. I was like, oh my God, I want so badly to hear her sing right now.
You think Adele is maybe the, you know, popular singer, the greatest singer that you've ever heard?
I don't know. To be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of either. Like, I don't think I would ever go see either of them live, or I don't think I'd ever pay money to go and listen to either of them.
What artist would you see? Like if you and Brit was like, I want to go see who?
Bruno.
Oh, okay.
Bruno is number one. And we almost saw Bruno when we were in Vegas for Super Bowl.
Oh,
Post
man.
Malone
Boy.
Is up there.
That ABC money is no joke.
I said almost.
Oh, my God.
Why do you think I didn't pull the trigger? I said almost.
I wasn't even almost. I was like, nope. Can't do that.
My Dr.
Don't apologize don't be like Kenny. You don't have, hey, you got that bread, man. Well, you know how you get all modest. Hey.
I don't have the money.
As Mark Jones
Bruno.
Would say, wear your blessings.
Wear your blessings. I wouldn't be able to wear or hear my blessings when it came to going to see Bruno Mars. Dr. David.
Bruno's bad.
Dr. David, right down to Matthew Smith's Chetty House, Prime Mariah.
Well, there's no, but yeah, but that was a long time ago.
Don't do that to Mariah.
Prime Mariah was a long time ago.
Prime Mariah was
a long time ago.
I'd say she still was in her prime with Emancipation to Meet Me. As far as singing ability.
Like 20 years ago.
As far as singing ability.
It was 20 years ago.
I keep telling you, I heard her on like a Tiny Desk singing We Belong Together like 3 years ago. Okay. 3 years ago, she's at a Tiny Desk singing that song. Phenomenal.
Matt George is at a Tiny Desk right now joining us.
That's actually quite big.
From the ABC 10 studios. It is a large work area that you have over there. First of all, great job Monday. Really enjoyed you guys out there at Santa Clara. And how was that opening night of the NFL season for the 49ers Monday Night Football?
Vibes are great. Vibes are always fun. Levi Stadium is an amazing place to watch a football game in the evening when you're not baking in the sun at a 1 o'clock kickoff. So sorry to those people who have to deal with that. Mm. But I love night games at Levi Stadium. It was a long day, but a fun day. I wish the game was a little bit better. Mm. The last two games that I've been to at Levi's were Niners Jets and Niners Giants. So both New York teams have gotten smacked the last two times that I've been there. But Niners looked good. It was fun to just be there and soak in the vibes, and fun to have that the show or the game on our station. So sorry, DirecTV users.
Well, sorry to them.
Get an antenna.
Did you expect a closer game, or did you kind of look at it like, nah, I think the Niners are going to handle these guys relatively easily?
When we heard the news that McCaffrey was out, I definitely expected it to be closer. I don't think anybody had Jordan Mason running all over the Jets the way that they did, especially with the start too, because I think the Niners had three and outs on their first two or three drives or something like that. So it was kind of a slow start, and Moody sure earned his paycheck with the amount of field goals that he got. Yeah. But I was a little concerned about the Niners' ability to move the football with their heavy reliance on Christian McCaffrey against the Jets defense that I, like everybody else, went into that game expecting to be significantly better than the way that they played. I was not impressed by Aaron Rodgers at all. He had one good drive in like the second quarter that resulted in the Hall touchdown. And then he had that broken play touchdown, but there wasn't anything that Aaron Rodgers did that suggests that he was a game changer by any means for the Jets, because he didn't even face the best version of the Niners defense, and they handled him pretty comfortably. And the fact that the Niners do what they do and put over 30 points up on a team without Christian McCaffrey and without particularly playing that well, with the exception of Mason, I just I don't know. I don't think that was close to the best version of the Niners, and they didn't seem to have much of an issue with, quote unquote, one of the best defenses in the league in the New York Jets.
Did you feel like they just picked up right where they left off, the 49ers did?
So I think this is where with media and with fans, we apply narratives when there are none. Like that was the narrative was, this is the first time we've seen the Niners since they lost in the Super Bowl, and they're it's a redemption arc, and they're trying to show that they're capable of going back. And that's not an accurate representation of what they were. It's just a damn good football team that took the field and handled their business. Like that's really what it was. Like there wasn't anything that the Niners did or didn't do that suggested, oh man, this team is still hung over from the Super Bowl or still has regrets and doubts from the Super Bowl. They came in and they said, okay, it's a new season, new slate. We're still expected to be the best football team or one of the best football teams. Let's play like it. And very quickly, as soon as the game started, I think all of the noise outside faded away and it was just this is a really good football team.
I really do believe the key to the Niners getting back and potentially winning a Super Bowl this year is they've got to, and it's easier said than done, but they've got to find a way to just treat this like a different season. Like they're not related. Like what you did last year, win or lose, is not related to this year. Show respect to every game that you play. And the whole notion of the only thing that matters is winning a Super Bowl. Like, yeah, we say it and we understand or whatever, but only thing that matters right now is Minnesota. Like winning that game against Minnesota, that's the most important thing. And if they're able to do that, I think they'll have a dominant season. But that's easier said than done. Like it's almost humanly impossible to not realize where you just came from last year, losing the Super Bowl, trying to get back there again, and knowing that you can go 16-1, and the only question you're going to be asked is, can you win the Super Bowl this time? So, but if they can find a way to kind of compartmentalize each game or just this season in general, I think they have a good shot of going back and hopefully winning this time.
Yeah, if I'm the Niners, the only thing that I'm looking back on last season is the fact that they know that they could play better than even last year, and they were right there. Like, you have the getting blown out by the Ravens. You struggled more than expected against Jordan Love and the Packers in the playoffs. You barely came back and beat the Detroit Lions to actually win the NFC Championship and make it to the Super Bowl. Like, the Niners can look back at last year and say, we got all the way there and had a chance to win in overtime against Kansas City, and we still did not play what we believe to be our best football. I mean, Christian McCaffrey had an unbelievable year. Nick Bosa wasn't playing very well, right? Debo Samuel was not as good as they believe he could be and feel he could be coming into this season, right? Brock Purdy is another year older and hopefully wiser and more skilled. So if I'm the Niners, I'm acknowledging last year happened, and I'm acknowledging that they made last year's run and were still, in my opinion, the best overall team in football last season with performances and games that did not look good. And still they were able to get there. So, hey, you improve upon last year. That should be enough, based on your standards, should be enough to win a Super Bowl.
Matt George with us, talking 49ers, because, of course, he was at the game on Monday, ABC 10, and Locked On Kings podcast, so we can shift to the Kings. Now I'm going to ask, because you don't seem as cheerful as you normally are, is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I'm good.
Okay.
Let's talk Kings.
Okay, let's do that. Let's talk Kings, and let's talk DeMar, because DeMar is everywhere. I'm sure Matt George's interview with DeMar DeRozan is about to appear at some point, because
I wish.
Well, you and us both, buddy, but he is all over the place promoting this book, and obviously he's talking a lot about the Sacramento Kings, and they asked him for what's your hottest take for the NBA season. He said the Kings are going to the Western Conference Finals. He sang the praises of the Kings. You've covered this franchise for a long time. I asked James a similar question. How different is it to hear someone like DeMar, a six-time All-Star, talking about, yeah, the winning culture that they're building, and the commitment to winning that they have, and that damn beam that they were lighting, they weren't going to light the beam against us, and just all of these overwhelmingly positive things that he had to say about his decision to come to Sacramento.
The thing that I've taken away from a lot of these interviews that he's doing, and I think this particular quote was on the podcast with Paul George, which, okay, Paul George can get DeMar DeRozan on his show, but we can't. What does Paul have that we don't? That's what I want to know. But DeMar said, when he had all these teams to choose from, the Lakers, which just pisses off Lakers fans even more. This is like the fifth or sixth time that DeMar's close to coming to the Lakers.
Calm down. You guys had no money. Shut up.
Well, and then there's the Clippers.
Calm down. You guys had no money. Shut up.
And a new arena, though. Like, I genuinely believe DeMar when he looked at all of his options, he said, I have the best chance to win in Sacramento.
The like, one that's interesting in all that, Matt, now that we say that, was Philly. Philly would have had the money, right?
Because
the Heat wouldn't have either.
Well, on Podcast P, he was saying he had to wait for Paul George. So if they didn't get Paul George, they'd have the money. If they did, I don't know if they would have had the money.
I see. Got you. I think I misinterpreted that to mean something else. Got you. That makes complete sense. Complete sense.
But, I mean, I genuinely believe DeMar and his belief that out of those teams, he thought Sacramento was the best chance to win. And, of course, financial implications to financial influence, Sacramento could get him the most money that he was going to get, or close to the most money that he was going to get as well. So that was that's an important element of this, too. But, like, DeMar recognizes where the Sacramento Kings are at and what they need. And he believes he is what they need. And DeMar is also, I think, aware that he's going into a situation. I just did a podcast on this recently. He's going into a situation where this is going to be different than anything he's ever done in his career. Like, he's never played with a team like the Sacramento Kings are right now, that he is going to be, and this sounds negative, but it's not at all. He's going to be a role player here in Sacramento. He has a specific role to fill. It's a very important, impactful role that still can have him leading the Kings in scoring on a semi-nightly basis and still being the clutch scorer that we know and still being that mid-range assassin that everybody expects him to be. He can still be all that. But in Sacramento, he doesn't have to be the dude. He's not the dude. In Sacramento, he's playing second to De'Aaron Fox. But I also think on the other side of that coin, De'Aaron Fox, I promise you, De'Aaron Fox does not give two you-know-whats who's taking the last shot if it's the right last shot and the Kings are making it. Mm-hmm. De'Aaron would give that ball to Keegan. De'Aaron would give that ball to Malik. De'Aaron would give that ball to Keon. De'Aaron would give the ball to Alex Len and say, if this is the right shot, you go ahead and take it. Look what he did in the playoffs to find the open man of Harrison Barnes instead of trying to force that shot. Right, De'Aaron will make the right play. So if the right play is getting the ball to DeMar instead of taking the shot himself, and vice versa, DeMar knows that the right play is attacking and two defenders come in and he kicks the ball out instead of forcing up a mid-range jumper, both of those guys are going to make the right play. Mm-hmm. What DeMar coming to Sacramento adds to the fold is just another unbelievably lethal weapon that defenses now have to figure out how to be in two places at once. How do you stop two at the same time? Yeah. You can't. And that's what DeMar said when he talked to me at Golden One Center.
Yeah, we're doing this countdown for the top 20 Kings games of the season. And one of the things I keep seeing in some of these games so far is when Harrison Barnes plays well, Kings usually win some of these games, right? And it's not breaking news, but one of the things last year was, and since he's been here really, was the inconsistency of Harrison Barnes, right? Like, he'd have a 20-point game and they'd win, and then the next night you're looking for him to do the same thing. He's got 6 points and they lose, or whatever the case may be. I bring all that up to say it feels like the guy who would quote-unquote be playing the Harrison spot as far as potentially the consistent scorer and all this other stuff is DeMar DeRozan. And it's I don't know if 1 + 1 = 2 here, but if we saw in the past, every time Harrison Barnes was scoring and playing well, they would win. And you get a guy that's more consistent doing that same thing. My thought, and like I said, the simple thought would be, they should win a lot of games because they have a more consistent Harrison Barnes type player here. And that's one of the things they needed to be a high 40s, 50-win team. Is that too simplistic, Matt, or does that make sense?
Oh, I think it's spot on, Casey. And I even simplified even more down to, it's not just that DeMar is a better version of HB. HB is bigger, taller, longer. So that's important considering Sacramento struggled with their perimeter defense. And I felt like their overall length and size had an issue to do with that pause.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I had to do it.
No, it was very good, man. That was very good. Focus, buddy. You got it. Come on. You got to regroup.
Think about the amount of times, and I know we've talked about this before at length, the amount of times that if the Kings' offense broke down and De'Aaron Fox was either off the floor or was like he had his picked up his dribble or whatever, the Sacramento Kings, or they just needed to stop the bleeding because they were on the wrong side of a run. It was Harrison Barnes in the post, or it was Harrison Barnes kind of clear out on the wing and HB go and get that shot. Now, when HB was on, it was good. It worked really, really well for Sacramento. You have a better, an elite version of that now in DeMar. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't just have to be a specialist in those spots, KC. DeMar can score 20 a night or more if he wants to. But in those particular moments, when you just need to stop the bleeding or got to have a bucket, or of course in the clutch or late in the shot clock or at the end of a quarter or whatever the case may be, you went from a guy in Harrison Barnes who is good, solid, to elite. Mm-hmm. And that is a major difference that I think we're going to see day one when the Kings take on the Timberwolves.
Do you think you can, obviously it's sight unseen, and Casey and I were talking about this earlier. Can you pinpoint what the Kings need? Like, if you feel like this team needs something, can you pinpoint what it is?
I still think it's better, consistent perimeter defense. I don't buy that the Kings are going to be any better defending the three this year than they were last year. I don't buy it because the Kings got torched from three-point range consistently last year, to where Mike Brown even pointed it out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Matt, are you safe? What is it? The Wyatt 6 is coming for Matt.
Sorry. We're saving power here at ABC.
Okay. It was like an episode of The Office. Just the lights cut out behind Matt. He wasn't moving around enough.
I'm distracted with every.
No, that's fine. You're fine. You're fine.
I'm trying to power through it.
You're doing a great job.
What were we even talking about? I don't know. Oh, perimeter defense. Yeah. The Kings' perimeter defense was so bad to where Mike Brown even remotely pointed it out that if the perimeter defense was league average, the Kings would have had a top 10, top 15 defense in the league throughout the season because of how bad the perimeter defense was. So I'm hoping De'Aaron is a difference maker again this season. I'm hoping Keon with more playing time is a difference maker this season, and DeMar and Herter and Keegan, whichever guys are handling defending the wings, can be helpful. But with the way Sacramento plays defensively, which is a lot of rotations and scrambling and help, that gave up a lot of open shots, and Sacramento clearly struggled on closeouts, and that's what got them killed in a lot of games, especially on the defensive end. So my biggest need still is just Sacramento's overall perimeter team defense, because when it comes to like one-on-one lockdown defense, I truth be told, I have more confidence in the Kings' individual defense against top guys this year than I've had in a long time. Because whoever the wing is, I have confidence in Keegan. Keegan's going to be tested, because when it's LeBron, that's going to be Keegan's responsibility. When it's Giannis, good freaking luck, but that's going to be Keegan's responsibility, right? So Keegan's going to be thrown into the fire even more than he already has been, but I have confidence in his ability to hold his own. And then if it's a guard, if it's Steph Curry, if it's Devin Booker, whoever, Dame Lillard, Fox or Keon, I feel comfortable defending in those spots. So that's a big difference from years past, is the individual defense against the top guys. I think Sacramento has got covered. The question is still their overall 48-minute team defense, and especially on the perimeter.
I'll ask both of you guys a question, because this is a good mention by Carlton. You can only change one thing for this year's Kings team. Their better perimeter defense, or they're better at the free throw line. Mm. I take the free throw line.
Mm. I think it's perimeter defense, because I know this team can score no matter what. But your free throw shooting was horrible. I think DeMar DeRozan alone is going to make this team a significantly better free throw shooting team. And I also think last season was such an outlier, because the Kings the season before were like 18th in the league free throw shooting wise, which isn't great. Mm-hmm. It's technically bottom half of the league, but 18th compared to 30th, like there's a difference of last season. If you're 18th last season instead of 30th, you probably win two or three more games just by themselves, just with that number being different alone. So I have faith with this roster and their ability offensively. I trust this roster completely on the offensive end. Defensively is still a question mark. So if you could guarantee me the perimeter defense is better, I'm telling you that Western Conference Finals prediction from DeMar DeRozan is more than a possibility.
You're taking the free throws, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm taking the free throws. And that doesn't mean that the defense isn't an issue. I just, like Matt kind of just pointed
out. I feel
like
you're winning more games no matter which one you select.
It's true. Sure. But I just I know offense isn't necessarily an issue, but if you can put games away at the free throw line, if you can
scored 142 and lost.
Yeah.
As we were looking at earlier.
I just think and also I feel like I don't know, maybe subconsciously I feel like that's more realistic that they can be a better free throw shooting team than a better defensive team with the personnel that they have right now. But I could just be projecting.
Well, and to Casey's point too, like there were throughout the season, the Kings struggled with their perimeter defense, but we could count on a hand the amount of games that the Kings straight up lost because they couldn't hit a free throw. Just like if they hit free throws in that game, it's a win instead of a loss. There were way too many of them to where there were times, I don't know if you guys remember this last season, but the Kings would step to the line at Golden 1 Center and the fans would groan. They'd almost rather like there'd be an advantage called and let the Kings just inbound the ball on the sidelines with a fresh shot clock. They would have preferred that because Sacramento, and teams knew that too. So teams were not afraid to reach and hack a little bit when they were attacking the basket. So yeah. I understand Casey's point completely. If you pick the free throw shooting to be better, if Sacramento can find a way to get their free throw shooting back to league average, I mean, that solves maybe the biggest weakness of this team on offense. And it was bad last season.
Matt, this conversation started because apparently Pat Bev said something on his podcast that both of us refused to listen to, that he wants Julius Randle on the Sacramento Kings.
Cool. Good for him.
Yeah. And we've always really liked Julius Randle, but kind of came to the conclusion like, it probably doesn't really make sense. Like, why does that fit? And it's Pat Bev, so we just kept going because it's like, well, I'm not going to go try to find context because I'm not listening to that. Kenny refused to listen to it, so everybody's just going to have to be left to assume that he's a dummy.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, he did put out his top centers in the league list, and Domantas Sabonis was not on that top centers in the league list, so that tells me everything I need to know about the IQ of Patrick Beverley. Julius Randle, like D'Lo and I, we've been in like the minority here in Sacramento of how much we like Julius Randle.
Yeah, KC
Randle.
Too.
Like,
which, yep.
Yeah, that's three.
Oh, KC, I'm sorry, KC.
Three,
yep.
Three Musketeers, man. That's three, man.
Only one of us trying to trade Keegan Murray, though.
Oh, wow. See how you got people believing this? You got people believing this.
No, Matt's ears start to burn when you bring up Keegan's name. Matt will be at home with his wife and kid, and then all of a sudden his ears burnt. Kenny, God damn it. And he fires up the YouTube, and there's Kenny talking about, well, you know, you can't say no to this. And
Love Keegan, man. That's my boy.
I like Julius Randle. He doesn't make any sense. At this point, he makes absolutely – because who is he replacing? Keegan?
Yeah, it doesn't
– No. Why? No. No. So Keegan's a better defender, and I have confidence in Keegan's three-point shooting ability way more than I have in Julius Randle's at this point. Plus, Keegan is cheaper, and he's younger. I'm just fine. Like –
And that's kind of where we got.
I'm glad you have your opinions.
That's kind of where we got to the what does make sense for this team, and I don't know that I really had an answer. Like I couldn't. I said if you could pull a player from Julius Randle's tier, who would it be? And I couldn't like pinpoint somewhere. I was like, oh, this would really work on Sacramento, and kind of settled on the guy who I think might be kind of the a hero when this is all said and done is Trey Lyles. Mm.
Yeah, I'm very interested in Mike Brown's rotations, period. But I'm very interested in what Trey Lyles' role looks like, because I'm a big fan of Alex Len. I'm a big believer in Alex Len. I think every time Alex Len steps on the floor, I feel like good things happen. He just always stays ready, and he makes a positive impact on the game. Plus, he's a big enough body to where he sets really good screens, and defensively, even if he's not a rim protector or a shot blocker by reputation, he's big, he changes shots, and he takes up space. So I'm a believer of Alex Len playing. That being said, I am not opposed at all to a small ball lineup with Trey Lyles at the five. But if that's the case, it's not that I have questions about Trey Lyles playing the five. I have questions of who's around him and who's with him, right? Because in terms of spacing, Trey Lyles as a five is fantastic. I thought last year was not an accurate representation of who Trey Lyles is as a basketball player. He dealt with a lot of nagging injuries, especially early in the season. So I'm not concerned at all about Trey based off of how last season went. I think Trey is an ideal fit for this Kings team, whatever role he's playing coming off the bench. He's an important piece of this team. And if he's on, the Kings are going to go or going to have a lot more success.
Go ahead.
No, can you walk me through the Trey Lyles five thing? What does that look like?
I'm curious about what it looks like next to him, right? If you're going small with Trey Lyles at the five, I don't know if there's any scenario you can do that with Keegan Murray not on the floor. Because defensively, I have concerns. Now, you could play Trey Lyles at the four with Sabonis on the floor with him, and then he's more just a perimeter guy. But typically, we see Trey Lyles getting a lot of those minutes when Sabonis is out of the game. So that's why I look at Trey Lyles at the five, and I say, okay, who are you playing at the four next to Trey Lyles that isn't catastrophic defensively? Because you're not going uber small with Kevin Huerter playing the four, I don't think. You're not having DeMar DeRozan play the four, I don't think. So if you're comfortable playing Trey Lyles at the five, I feel like Keegan has to be on the floor with him the entire time. If not, then Trey Lyles is a four on this team and you roll out Alex Len.
I agree 100%. Gotcha. And I like Alex Len like you do. I think there's plenty of times when you can have Trey Lyles as a small ball five. I watch, that's another thing I see when watching some of these games too, is I see Trey Lyles and I get hyped up for the season he might have, because to a certain degree, he's going to have a little bit of a lighter load as far as like scoring, needing him to score or something like that. And I think, Matt, that can make him score more, you know, because he's going to get a lot more open looks. He's going to be able to play a lot more freer offensively, because I think their firepower offensively is going to be so great elsewhere. It could just make him just feel right at home out there on the floor.
Trey Lyles strikes me as the guy that is maybe might have some of the most noticeable benefits of playing with DeMar DeRozan. Because if you watch a lot of DeMar highlights, like YouTube DeMar DeRozan passing highlights, one, you're going to see that he's an underrated passer. Two, you're going to see that he makes a lot of good decisions while in midair. But number three, you'll find out the amount of assists DeMar DeRozan gets to corner threes. It's nuts the amount of times DeMar hits the corner. Because DeMar, when he attacks from the mid-range, he can attack straight away, top of the key, at the free throw line if he wants to. But he typically likes those spots like right on the wing, right? Kind of not necessarily the elbow of the free throw line, but a little bit more over where like the three-point line really starts to do that deep curve on the wing. Just inside there, those are his sweet spots on both sides of the floor. If he gets the ball in those spots, defenses know he's looking to shoot. So typically when he dribbles down into those spots and starts to move his way like towards the corner, but not all the way into the corner, whoever is defending the man in the corner is typically the guy that's coming over to help. And DeMar, if he has enough space, will raise up and shoot that shot regardless of the two coming over. If not, DeMar kicks out and finds that corner three. If Trey Lyles is just sitting in the corner with a lawn chair and a book, because he loves books, waiting for that corner three, I think he's going to benefit from it a lot, because DeMar will find him in that spot. Keegan will benefit from being in that spot. Kevin Huerter, Keon, like the Kings, when DeMar DeRozan is on the floor and has the ball in his hands, the Kings need to always have a dude in the corner. I'm telling you, go and watch the highlights and look at the amount of times that DeMar finds that corner three. It's automatic for him.
Trey Lyles would never be on page one.
No, he definitely would not. He's the last page. He didn't finish it. Before, I want to ask both of you guys this before the show ends, before Matt leaves. But there's breaking, it's not really breaking news, but our people over at Front Office Sports, is following this whole Pac-12 thing, and they put out, tweet out, and in their story it says, Sacramento's local politicians and business leaders are planning a campaign to help Sac State into the Pac-12 or Mountain West, a source tells Front Office Sports. It said the school would need to go the NCAA's FBS transition process. And just them putting out, putting that out there lets me know, like, is people are really talking about it, or they're really trying to figure out if they can make it happen.
People, Matt, you know, are really talking about
Yeah, facts. Do you, Matt, how do you, how you've followed, you've been here the entire time in this city, and you now you're dealing with sports people on a daily basis. How realistic do you think that is for Sac State to be able to get to the Pac-12 or Mountain West?
The biggest concern that I have with it, from my understanding of conference realignment and conference changes, is, as a lot of stuff with the NCAA, financial. So when I first heard about this, I'm thinking, okay, like, financially, that's a big change for Sac State, who already has to try to compete with the Wild West that is the transfer portal and paying players and things of that nature. So Sac State is already trying to navigate. I had a really good conversation with friend of the show, David Patrick, right before DP went to TCU. Is that where he went? Or LSU?
LSU. That's
where he went. Yeah, before he went to LSU, like, we had a conversation about just how difficult it was even for him from a basketball standpoint to manage the Wild West that is how college football and college basketball and college athletics are changing. So finances are already at the center of it. But KC, what you said there that piques my interest is the fact that there are business leaders and politicians, city leaders getting involved. Okay, now the money doesn't sound like as big of a problem if there's actually going to be a backing behind it, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they're not involved, then I think Sac State is relying super heavy on donors and things of that nature to make this jump happen. Yeah. And I don't know how realistic that is, considering how long, I mean, I know it's football compared to basketball, but how long it's taken them to figure out what to do with the Nest and their basketball arena. So if it weren't for the city leaders and business leaders getting involved, I would say it feels like wishful thinking. Mm-hmm. But if others in this city recognize the opportunity and try and jump on it, which seems to be a consistent theme with this city and athletics over the last couple of years, then I think it's more than possible.
It's time, Casey. Break open that checkbook and start getting some of these facilities, man. Well, you're one of the biggest donors in Sacramento. Well, you should be one of the biggest donors in Sacramento.
I did say last night I would dedicate a dollar a month. You can lock me in for that.
Oh, all right. Well, we can lock in Sac State to being where they are right now. Where are we tomorrow night, Matt?
Where are we tomorrow night?
Well, you should find out.
You guys at the West Park game?
Rematch of a section championship game, the 12 Bridges Raging Rhinos against the Casa Roble Rams. I'll be at Casa Roble High School tomorrow night.
Holy Bowl's on Saturday. Jesuit and Christian Brothers at Hughes Stadium. They said they're expecting 15,000 people. I don't know.
It's always a blast. It's always a blast. Yeah. Hughes Stadium is a great location for high school football. When those kind of crowds show up, it's always a good time. If you're just a fan of football and you have no dog in the fight, but you want to just go experience a fun high school football atmosphere, go to the Holy Bowl at Hughes Stadium.
Do you have a Friday night show, or is this just rolled into your?
It's like newscast. Slapped onto the end of the newscast. So I handle the game of the week. I'll do like an ESPN-style two-minute highlight package of the game that I'm at with interviews and things like that. And then Kevin is back at the station. He'll do highlights and stuff for the rest of the games that we cover. So.
And for people that don't know, do you shoot the game?
Oh, yeah.
You do everything yourself.
I'm on the sidelines with the camera, shooting it all, writing it all, cutting it all.
You do four jobs when you're out somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's media. Y'all know. y'all know the grind.
Well, as we head over to our other radio station, yeah, we're pretty familiar with that. Head over to trainwithmap.com/ESPN1320 or maptrition.com. I really encourage you to go with Train with Map, M-A-P, trainwithmap.com/ESPN1320. You can get access to all of the supplements that I take on the show. We talk about the strength enhancers. We talk about the fat burners, the cravings crushers. Greg was in here raving about the protein shakes. It's because they are on point. You can get them all. Use the promo code DLO1320 I think you either get 10% off or you get free shipping, or I think you could choose between the two. I'm not sure which one it is, but it's awesome. trainwithmap.com/ESPN1320. Make sure you're locked in to the Locked On Kings podcast with our man Matt George and, of course, all of his great coverage over there on ABC 10.